What does Issues Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from, 618-223-8384. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384.
Being silenced for my beliefs. This isn't a battle that anybody can win. I was a little hesitant to be stepping into the line of fire, I'll be honest.
From the moment I gave my answer on stage that night, I have had no support from the Miss California organization. This is all happening because of the stance that I took for traditional marriage.
Were the jokes in questionable taste? Of course they were. Would I do anything to advocate or contribute to underage sexual abuse or misconduct? Absolutely not. Not in a thousand years. Look at me.
It took a couple of days for him to think of that excuse that, no, he wasn't talking about my daughter who was there with me at the game, the 14-year-old. He was talking about some other daughter.
We talk a lot about the things you see in church on Sunday morning. Fewer men, there's no doubt about that. If you're walking to a lot of churches on Sunday morning, especially during the main worship service, one thing you wouldn't see, not a lot of, unless they were in diapers, and even then, maybe not even then, children. You'd see a lot of young adults, adults, older people, the tall people, the short ones, the little ones, the ones who don't behave so well, are often shuffled off to children's church or the nursery or some other venue, entertained for 45 minutes to an hour, and then mom and dad pick them up and everybody goes home. And whether you call it children's church or not, they're not in the worship service with the parents. Now, I wonder what this is going to mean 25, 30 years from now. Children, young people who have been segregated from their parents, from the adults in worship, what is church going to look like 25 years from now if the popular thing in evangelical churches nowadays is basically what one of our guests in the next 2 hours calls youth group for big people, if that's what church has become in many evangelical churches? What will it be when we get these kids out of children's church? We're going to talk about children and worship on this Tuesday afternoon, the 16th of June, here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Cantor Phil Magnus will be our guest for the first half hour of the program. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MY-IE. 877-623-6943. You can also email your questions or comments to us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Kim Riddlebarger will join us later in this hour to talk about American Christians funding Jewish settlers and to talk about Christian Zionism in general. Then in the second hour of the program, Warren Cole Smith, author of a new book called A Lover's Quarrel with the Evangelical Church, will answer the question, what happened to American evangelicalism? In particular, has it cut itself loose from everything that the church has been in the past? Joe Dallas will join us in the last half hour. We'll talk about a religious gay activist group called Soul Force. Our call-in number again, 1-877-623-6943, or talkback@issuesetc.org. Joining us to talk about children and worship, Cantor Phil Magnus, cantor at Bethany Lutheran Church and School in Naperville, Illinois, composer of Sing the Faith, the Small Catechism, set to music. Phil, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd.
You say that when it comes to kids and Sunday morning, we need to give them something to grow into rather than grow out of. What do you mean by that?
Well, children learn the way of worship just as they learn other family habits. They learn their parents' language, customs, table manners, all that stuff. The family of Christ is no different from any other family. And I think children's church, as you were talking about, that a lot of churches are doing, even in our synod, it's not a good model. It segregates the family of God. The best model is the divine service done well, with parents teaching their children the family way of worship.
We're told that the kids can't get anything out of quote-unquote adult church. What do you say to that?
Well, my kids have gotten a lot out of it, and the kids at Bethany have the same red blood cells and gray matter between their ears. So I guess I would like to know a little more specific as what people mean when they say that, because my experience has been that kids get a lot out of the divine service.
Well, I'm trying to explore the what you would call the flawed logic behind children's church or segregating kids out of the Sunday morning worship life of the rest of the congregation. Mm-hmm. What are the premises at work there behind the idea that we should take kids away from their parents on Sunday morning rather than leave them with their parents in grown-up worship?
Right. Well, the psychologists will always like to say, you know, things are rarely solely determined, but I think we can see a couple of forces at work in our culture today. I think one is just the rampant enthusiasm that's out there. Postmodern man no longer really responds to objective argumentation or common sense realism. They just want things to have an impact. And so if the adults are wanting the wow of contemporary worship and they want to have something that moves them, and if you go to the worship conferences of people that promote what's called contemporary worship today, you know, the verbs will be used like being moved and being sent. Well, they're going to want their children to be moved and sent and wowed. And so, you know, kids being at a different place developmentally in terms of what would entertain them, then the need is to go entertain them somewhere else so the parents can get their impact and the kids can go get their impact. It's not a very biblical way of how families should grow up in the Word, but I think that's in play here, enthusiasm. And then I think maybe an older current would be rationalism. You know, this idea we've got to learn something, and so therefore the event has to be structured so that everybody is getting something out of it. Maybe that's the verbiage that you were using. So since the sermon is at a more adult level, or probably in today's culture more of a 6th to 8th grade level, then you know, these younger kids can't possibly get anything out of it, so therefore, you know, move them somewhere else. And I would argue instead that that's just a faulty premise. I think the liturgy works on everyone holistically, and not everyone is engaged 100% all the time in everything, nor should they be.
I want to explore both of those things, both the enthusiasm that you pointed out and the rationalism, one at a time. Here's kind of a practical concern that I think might arise if you've got a very loud praise band, some lights, a quickly changing big screen or a large screen television, something like that at the front of the church, mm-hmm. and lots of changing activity to keep everyone mesmerized. You know, kids are susceptible to that. Mm-hmm. You take a little kid. I was at some sort of event in St. Louis a couple of weeks ago, and there were little children there, and there was a full-blown hardcore rock band playing on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
The kids weren't sitting there quietly. It mm-hmm. got them completely zapped up. It's
right.
like they were mainlining sugar or something like that. And, of course, the parents were a little bit put out because it's distracting them from enjoying the music. I wonder if something like that happens in the entertainment end of contemporary worship, and that's why the kids have got to go someplace else.
You know, you'd have to probably further that discussion with people that have a lot more experience in that. One of the dangers of talking about worship in general, I'll take Dr. Nagel's advice, is you have to be specific. And, you know, one place the contemporary service is warmed over 60s music or 70s music. Another place it's a little more upbeat, but, you know, a little more edgy, Gen Xer style. And then they have the cutting edge thing. It sounds like what you were describing would be, you know, a Generation Y, just a high energy, almost an emergent church kind of a thing. And maybe at that point, some parents would just want the kids out of the way because the kids would be just so overwhelmed by all the technology and the lights. And that's a whole separate concern, because if we're in this video generation, if the worship experience of children or adults, I think, you know, one of my mantras is kids are people too, so I'll just have the same concern for both kids and adults. If it is if the idea is it needs to stimulate senses so that we have some type of felt response, you're just really in the wrong theological neighborhood.
Then on the issue of rationalism, Phil, I wonder if most of the preaching is how-to preaching and geared at adults. That would hardly seem relevant to anyone under about 12 years old.
Well, and here I could speak a little more authoritatively, because one of my little hobbies is to go around churches, because I do travel. I speak about worship. My little Liturgy Solutions, a company that I run with Cantor Stephen Johnson, we do some consulting, and I've done work with synods. And recently I was blessed with a sabbatical by my congregation and went to over a dozen liturgies at 8 different churches and 2 states, and I intentionally, when I'm on the road, I intentionally seek out congregations that do a multiplicity of worship styles, so that I can observe. And I think there you do have something that is out there that I've witnessed, where it is how-to preaching, and so therefore, if it's going to be a series on money management or how to be a better friend, I run into that one. The children's church would be geared toward doing the same how-to at a more juvenile level.
That's quite interesting. When we come back from this break, we're going to continue our conversation with Cantor Phil Magnus, cantor at Bethany Lutheran Church and School in Naperville, Illinois, composer of Sing the Faith, a small catechism set to music, talking about children and worship. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 16th of June. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what it means to parent in the pew. If the kids are going to be in the divine service on Sunday morning, as they should be, part of the family, part of the body of Christ, what does the parent do with the kid in the pew? We'll talk about that after this.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with cup holder for your double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues Etc. back. Dave Miller, John Young, Joanne Young, Matthew Kellner, Sharon Hutchison, Pastor Richard Neugenbauer, Judith Tonning, Sharon Wilson, Kate Duncan, and Deborah Gaylord. Thanks for your support.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia; Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas; Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas; Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri; Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California; Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas; Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri; Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas; Faith Lutheran, Arizona, Texas; and Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Promote. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click Promote. The Issues Etc. 300.
I believe in God the Father Almighty.
The first article of the Apostles' Creed from the new resource from Concordia Publishing House called Sing the Faith. Our guest was the composer of Sing the Faith. Phil, tell us a little bit about Sing the Faith.
Sing the Faith is a collection of 66 songs that sets the small catechism to music.
Why is this important?
Music is a wonderful way of teaching. How did we all learn our ABCs when we were 2 or 3 years old? We learned a little song. And it's a great aid to memory. And it is our hope that by having younger children learn these texts to heart, that while they're in the grammar stage of development, that when they are in junior high and are ready for logic, what does this mean? They'll be prepared for much more thoroughgoing catechesis. It's very frustrating for pastors and teachers to have to try to get eighth graders to memorize texts. You know, why not get these on the children's lips and into their hearts when they're younger, when they are wired and programmed for doing this?
Folks, you can find out more about Sing the Faith at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand, or you can order Sing the Faith by calling Concordia Publishing House, their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Sing the Faith. Let's talk about parenting in the pew. What should parents do if they've said, okay, right, no more children's church, no more segregating our children away from the family of God and from our own family during the Sunday morning worship hour? What do they do with the kids in the pew?
That's an excellent question, Todd. And if I might just for a moment go back to what we were talking about before, because it leads into this really well. Now, we were talking about the impact style worship of the enthusiasts and the and also the rationalist approach as well. And you see that in churches where the children are shuffled off, as you did in your introduction, talked about in many parishes or congregations you go to, and you don't see many children out there. Well, if worship is going on in one place while Sunday school is happening simultaneously elsewhere, that's one model. That really trains kids not for the divine service, but when they get older, their Sunday morning experience is going to be a Bible lesson, and so they're probably going to go off to the Bible church in their neighborhood around the corner. And if it's the impact style, children's church model, where you've got one type of high-impact praise and going on with lights and screens, and so the kids will be doing more juvenile ditties while the adults rock out to more high-powered Gen X rock and roll, that's going to be incubating the youth to go off to New Life Praise Tabernacle when they leave home. So I really don't know why any Lutheran church would want to be catechizing their kids in this way. Even if a particular LCMS congregation has worship that is more along one of these lines, when these kids grow up and they move away and they go to the LC, you know, they go to live in another town halfway across the country or downstate, they're not going to really find a home in the divine service because they were never raised in it. So, yes, it's important to get the kids in the divine service, and as part of that, we need to be parenting in the pew. I see two sides of the road, I guess. There's a road that we want to be on, which is training our children up in the way they should go and teaching our children diligently. And then there are, two sides of the road we don't want to fall off of. One side is that side of enthusiasm that we've talked about. The other side is when children are ignored. A lot of good Lutheran parents, they bring their kids to the divine service, and they pop Johnny there in the pew, and they got Susie there, but they ignore the kids. And maybe that's related to just a historic teaching of reverence or just being good. But that's kind of a law message the kids get. Church is a place where I am good because I am quiet, I'm not doing anything. But that really doesn't teach the family customs, the family way of worship to the children. So parents need to be actively involved in raising their children in confessional Lutheran piety. So I would say one thing, it's okay to talk to your kids during church if you're pointing them to the gospel. lots of little things that you can do. Lean over and whisper to them when something age-appropriate comes up in the sermon. Hey, did you get that? And maybe they didn't, but it's okay. Explain to them. Pastor was talking about something pretty cool. Park your kids up on the front. Don't sit way in the back where the kids can't see anything. So much with the younger children, the preliterate children, that goes on in the divine service is a gospel for the eyes, where they can see the colors and the actions, the ceremonies, the rituals, the artwork. And those are great teaching occasions. I always lift my, Evan's now five, but since he's been three, I've been lifting him up whenever the pastors say the words of institution. And just like our acolytes have their eyes trained on pastor to help the congregation focus on pastor when he says the words of our Lord, Evan is drawn into that. Do I expect him to be firing 100% at 3, 4, 5, 6 years old? No. It's okay. On the other, you don't fall off don't fall on the side of the street where you're expecting a young child to be 100% engaged all the time. It's okay also for their minds to wonder. But you find those opportunities where you can plug them in. And as they get older, they get plugged in a little more and a little more. For example, one other example before the next question that's worked really well for us, teaching simple responses. When Evan was three or four, same with Trevor and Caitlin, who are, they're now teenagers, but did the same thing with these kids, and we learned these habits from a wise pastor's wife. Teach the child thanks be to God and Lord have mercy when they are 2 and 3 years old, and bring them up next to you, and then, like, we're going to listen to pastor now, and when pastor says, Lord, in your mercy, we're all going to say, hear our prayer. And when they do the prayer of the church, well, then they can go back to, daydreaming or drawing, whatever, when the offering's passed out. And when they get a little older, they can learn, create in me a clean heart, O God. And so then when they're 4 or 5, there's another part of the service they can participate in. So as they age, you keep finding more and more things you can plug them into. Teach them Lamb of God when they're 3 or 4. Glory to God in the highest, they're going to learn when they're a little older, because there's a lot more words and the music's a little more complex. But there are many things that they can learn when they're pre-literate before they're even ready to learn the art of hymn singing.
Mary is listening in Southern Illinois. Mary, welcome.
Hello. You guys are kind of freaking me out, because the first section you were talking about contemporary worship and the children's reaction to the music and whether they were taken somewhere else. I am blessed to be isolated, I suppose, in a small confessional Lutheran church where I was not even aware of the kind of environment that you're talking about. Our children do more what your guest was just describing. I have been amazed and delighted, since I was not able to do this with my children, to see the young parents in our congregation. If the child is small enough that they're holding the mother may be singing the song into the child's ear or whatever part of the liturgy we're in. The child is repeating back, how a baby will hold on to your cheek and play with your nose. The children are doing that sort of thing. I notice as they grow up in our church, the children don't even need the hymnal to follow the liturgy, because they do know it by heart easily, whether it's spoken or whether it's sung. And I really agree with Luther on this, that, well, it's kind of like the alphabet song. You teach them when they're tiny, because it's easy, and then you start to plug in the context as you go along. And it's delightful to watch when it's done by devoted parents.
Mary, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in Southern Illinois. Your thoughts with about a minute. I'm going to hold you on the other side of the break, if you don't mind, Phil, for a few more minutes and a few more questions. But your thoughts on Mary's call with about a minute before our break.
Well, it sounds like Mary is blessed to be in a church where they are nurturing a confessional Lutheran piety in the children. And I'm blessed to serve at a parish where we are doing that as well. Going back to your first question, Todd, when you asked, what do you say to people who say that children don't get anything out of the liturgy? What Mary said reminds me of my response. The kids in Southern Illinois, where she's at, the kids at Bethany and so many other places that I've been around the Synod, they have the same red blood cells and the same gray matter between their ears, and So, of course, they can get a lot out of the liturgy. And indeed, I would say this, if you're going to be gospeling people and you're going to be administering the sacraments to them, it's really not a question of whether or not you do the liturgy. It's what liturgy are you going to do? And I say, let's hardwire our kids to be Lutheran and give them a thoroughly Lutheran liturgy.
When we come back from this break, I want to explore that final thought there a little bit more with Cantor Phil Magnus. We are wiring our kids for something. Are you training your kids in your allegedly Lutheran, Presbyterian, Methodist congregation to be Pentecostals when they grow up? A lot of them are. If you worship like a Pentecostal, guess what? You're going to believe like one sooner or later. You really will. Or a charismatic. We're going to wire our kids on Sunday morning for something. They're going to learn what it is they believe and practice in some way. So why not the historic Christian faith and practice? Why not faithful scriptural belief and practice? After all, they're going to learn something there on Sunday morning. If you send them off to children's church, you know what they're going to learn? Do you know what they're going to learn? They're going to learn they don't belong in church. I predict a generation of kids who leave Sunday morning sooner than the previous generation decided to leave Sunday morning on account of children's church. When we come back, more with Cantor Phil Magnus on children in worship.
Faithful confession trumps company loyalty. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What does Issues Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8384. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
You may be aware California's economy is circling the drain on its way to sewer town. Its economic collapse can be credited to outrageous spending. Here's an example. Local pro-lifers say Planned Parenthood gets hundreds of millions of dollars from state and federal tax funding. So Governor Schwarzenegger has proposed reducing their state funding by $36 million. Officials from this kingpin of the abortion industry are screaming about it and demanding an increase instead of a decrease. They'd have the state go without schools, firefighters, and police so they can continue to promote their radical pro-abortion agenda. Visit lifeissues.org, click on today's broadcast link, and tell the governor to keep cutting funding for Planned Parenthood.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Carla Kirby, Marvin Cotton, Clyde Long, Jeffrey Feel, Sarah Myers, Chris Dernay, Pastor Stephen Girard, Dave Levy, Carolyn Boalak, and David Stevens. Thanks for your support.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell slowly go by.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about children and worship for the next few minutes of the program. Then Dr. Kim Riddlebarger will join us to talk about American Christians funding Jewish settlers in the Holy Land and Christian Zionism. Cantor Phil Magnus is our guest. Here is Steve calling from St. Louis. Hi, Steve. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, no problem. I have a couple of observations. One, from a child's perspective growing up, and then two, as a parent. From a child's perspective, we grew up in a Baptist church where they had the Sunday school, children's church, which was basically some type of moralism, from the moral teaching of the Bible, get ditty little songs, and some entertainment, some cheap puppets. What I came to the conclusion of listening to this was, well, we just gone high tech, but most contemporary services are the same thing: moralistic teaching, ditty songs, and some entertainment. Now, as a parent, my thing is that we, early on with our children, always sat in the front rows. For two reasons. First of all, kept their attention, because that's where all the action is. But the other thing we also noticed was, when those times they sit in the very back, the children couldn't see, and they got bored. And I think that's why, you always see these parent rows in the back row. I always thought they should be the front row. And then my third observation is that many churches where you have multiple services and Sunday schools that overlap, I've noticed a lot of parents will drop their kids off at Sunday school. The parents go to worship. So I guess we have a situation where the parents think that they don't need Sunday school and the children don't need worship.
Steve, thank you very much. Your thoughts on Steve's call, Phil?
Well, Steve is absolutely right in that when you have Sunday school and worship at the same time, you're going to have that dynamic in play. We experienced that at Bethany. The situation that we inherited when I came here, and it predated the pastors who are here now, they had worship at the same time as Bible study. And it took several years for the congregation to get to the point where our voters' assembly decided to adjust our worship times and discontinue that practice. And we did lose about 20 families, and it wasn't an easy decision to make. But at the same time, we see that it's really the best thing to do, because we don't want to be giving children the message that their Sunday morning experience is to have a class of some type. Now, fortunately, being a confessional Lutheran church, they don't get the moralistic little lesson like the caller did at his Baptist church growing up. But so we do have a very good Sunday school here. But nonetheless, they are not hearing the word and receiving the sacraments and in the context of the liturgy. And so, they would not be growing into a confessional Lutheran piety if all they were going to do was go to Sunday school. And then by the same token, I keep saying kids are people too. Their parents should be in Bible class. And, of course, it's awfully convenient if you can just drop your kids off for an hour. And so now the adults are not continuing in catechesis as we would like them to. So it really is for the best to have Sunday school and divine service at different times.
Finally then, Phil, you say that we as modern American parents spend a lot of time and money trying to give our kids everything that we had and more when it comes to material things. How would that apply also to Sunday morning and to Christian worship?
Well, perhaps there is an appeal to some people today because of the variety. Americans love choices. Americans love variety, so there's a novelty. So when a congregation offers multiple worship formats, there is a sense of, oh, wouldn't this be fun? Oh, wouldn't this sound really cool? In fact, we've had some members who've left Bethany, who have now come back, and we rejoice over this, where two different families went through an experience where they went to contemporary worship at other congregations, and after a certain period of time, the novelty worn off, and they realized that that while they were perhaps enjoying something fun and maybe something that they didn't have growing up, so they thought it would be really entertaining. After a while, they needed to come back to what one of the gals said was a real church. And I think she and her husband both would agree that while we're busy helping our kids and providing for our kids and maybe giving them things that we didn't have, we need to remember to give our children what we did have, at least those of us who were blessed to be raised in the Christian faith, and that is our grandfather's church.
Cantor Phil Magnus is cantor at Bethany Lutheran Church and School in Naperville, Illinois. He's a composer of Sing the Faith, the small catechism set to music. Phil, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thank you very much, Todd, and I really do encourage the listeners to check out the songs. I'm a little shy about promoting them because it's my own work, but the children really do enjoy singing these songs, and I don't want to send the message with this interview about teaching our children the way in worship that we don't, at the same time, that we certainly embrace the joy of worship, and we do embrace the joy of the gospel as we worship. And the joy of the gospel comes through in these songs. Indeed, in music classes in our day school, the kids look at the opportunity to learn new catechism songs as a reward. I tell my third, fourth, and fifth graders when we get through our sight singing lessons that if we get through our curriculum in time, they'll get rewarded with a catechism song. And it really is a wonderful thing to have an experience such as at the end of the year choir party to have a group of fourth and fifth graders come over and sing one of the catechism songs for you just because they enjoy them so much.
Thank you very much for being our guest, Phil.
Thank you, Todd. God bless.
He's talking about Sing the Faith. You can find out more about it by going to our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Ask about Sing the Faith, the small catechism set to music.